I'm well rested today. And why? Because SunsetLakeCBD.com has introduced a new product. You all know about their classic CBD sour gummy bears. They are on sale right now. If you use the promo code SLEEP, you get 30% off. But why? Why would they do that? Why sleep? Well, because they are now also have released a sleep gummy, which includes a blend of CBD, CBN, and melatonin, specifically formulated to help you fall asleep.
Matt's checking it out right now, but you can't have it because you'll fall asleep at work.
Well, I'll
but
tell you something.
They do look good.
The
right?
Elderberry, their elderberry flavor, and that, which is delicious. And elderberry is also, I use that for cough medicine sometimes. But Bradley came in today and he was like, I tried those things out. They were great. Emma used them last night.
I did.
And so did I. And that is why we're so perky and full of energy. Despite the fact that I have, I'm not even going to go into what's going on in my house this weekend. Folks, here's the big news, though. To celebrate the release, Sunset Lake CBD is offering 30% off their sleep gummies and their original sour CBD gummies.
Those are tasty. I remember snacking on those.
Super tasty. Almost too tasty, to be honest with you, because you get really mellowed out after several one of those. But, folks, you'll love this stuff. And the sale on the CBD ends today. It ends at the end of day today. So use the promo code SLEEP. You get 30% off. Visit SunsetLakeCBD.com to try these amazing new gummies and take advantage of the sale while it lasts. 30% off. You know Sunset Lake CBD. They have great products, great agricultural practices, great movement practices. They support all sorts of charities, unions, soup kitchens, you name it. Innocence Project, they have been a great sponsor for this program. Couldn't feel happier about them. And frankly, couldn't feel happier about a new mechanism for me to fall asleep. I've been using the tinctures for now, I don't know, like 3 years, I feel like. But the gummy bears, as long as you take them like 45 minutes in advance, you're in good shape. Sleep, 30% off, SunsetLakeCBD.com. And now for the show that they sponsored.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Monday, May 23rd, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, executive editor of the American Prospect magazine, just the American Prospect, David Dayen will be here. On the shortage of baby formula and on the dangers faced by truck drivers, one of the nation's biggest carbon dioxide delivery. Also on the program today, Joe Biden says the U.S. would intervene militarily to defend Taiwan. Trump-appointed judge issues an injunction on the Title 42 rollback, basically adopting Stephen Miller's frame of immigration. Georgia and Texas primaries happening today. Henry Cuellar goes super gross.
And those primaries are happening tomorrow.
Primary, yes,
not
against
today.
Sorry about that, Jessica Cisneros. Joe Biden announces new trade pact to replace TPP. The Southern Baptist Convention releases a third-party report showing decades of sexual abuse and victim vilification. And really sad to report, still no Republican winner in the Pennsylvania Senate primary. This is going to really cut into their ability to run in the general. Joe Biden signs a $40 billion military aid for Ukraine amid calls for a ceasefire. New York State new congressional maps, and state Senate maps for that matter, has sitting congresspeople on the move. New report, Israel uses U.S. weapons to destroy U.S. aid projects in Gaza. And Ginny Thomas, you know her, the wife of the Supreme Court Justice, directly involved in attempts to overturn the election. I'm sure it doesn't intimidate some state election worker to get a letter from the wife of a sitting Supreme Court Justice. Labor wins in Australia. Been a long time coming. And Pfizer says three shots work for kids under the age of five. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Yes, folks, sorry, rough start today. Things in my apartment have been a little bit crazy over the weekend. I don't want to involve any HIPAA violations, but I can tell you that a child has a COVID. It was not an easy COVID. It wasn't as bad as I had it, but I'm becoming around more convinced that genetics plays a role in terms of how it impacts you, because hers was basically like, you know, not unlike my experience, which was not good. And then simultaneously, my other child had some type of stomach bug and was, you know, we were watching, as we do, some really bad movies over the weekend, movie night, Friday and Saturday night, and also adding projectile vomiting into that. So a little bit hectic this weekend, but all's well that ends well. Everybody seems to be okay right now.
That's good.
At the house. Oh, and look who's here. Emma Vigeland, of course. Hi, Emma.
Hi. I'm doing well. How are you?
I see. I guess my sort of like jumbledness has caught on.
Yes, it's contagious.
I am what I am. Tomorrow, and there's been all sorts of like craziness in New York because of the redistricting, and that's a long story. We've told it in, you know, sort of in a rolling manner. There were referendums last November, I guess, in New York State. One of them was allowing for the assembly to draw districts. It failed and was really an abject failure in New York State Democrats letting people know what was on these ballots and why they were important. So there was an independent, essentially not commissioned, more or less commissioned, that was set up to do this, but that the state assembly tried to draw them first, overreached, many people say, although it was definitely needed, overreached insofar as, you know, what would trigger perhaps a state judge for saying, like, you know, you overreached. And so now we have a situation where the districts have been redrawn. And Sean Patrick Maloney, the head of the DCCC,
whose job is ostensibly to maximize as many Democratic seats in the elections coming up,
decided to run not in his existing district, although it was like substantially similar, 75%, I think, more or less, the same voters, decided to use this opportunity to pick up a 2% better chance to win by going after a rising progressive in the House, Mondaire Jones. So then Mondaire Jones had to decide whether he was going to run against Jamal Bowman, another rising progressive in the House. Instead, Jones decided to run in a different district that is part of Manhattan and Brooklyn, which is full of a lot of people, not the least of whom Bill de Blasio. So it's created all sorts of craziness and in New York state politics, and there's a lot of resent against Maloney, and it well deserved. In New York state, you do not have to reside in the district to run. You just need to be a state, a resident of the state.
But it's pretty egregious because if you know a little bit about Mondaire Jones's story, he grew up in the district. His mom worked in the district, single mom cleaning houses there. It was like integral part of like his identity as a politician. And Maloney's like, I don't really care. I'm just going to run in this district anyway, and I'm the head of the DCCC, and I can do what I want. And
didn't even give him a heads up.
Oh, no. And it's so bad that even Richie Torres, who is a deeply, you know, well, at least pro-Israel, but I would say a fairly conservative Democrat, especially for being one of the younger Democrats in the House, said, this is ridiculous. You're pitting two up-and-coming black lawmakers against each other. And that's exactly what the head of the DCCC did. Yep.
In other news, we have primaries tomorrow in Texas and in Georgia in terms of the Democratic competitions that are going on. Probably the highest profile one is Jessica Cisneros trying again to unseat Henry Cuellar. Cuellar is, I think, easily the most conservative Democrat in the Democratic caucus, fully against abortion rights. Also, rarely sees a Republican piece of legislation he doesn't appreciate. The only value there is that he is one vote that maintains Nancy Pelosi's gavel. And I suppose maybe for Nancy Pelosi, there's also value insofar as, you know, he is a vote against a lot of the progressive agenda. I can't prove that, but I suspect that's part of it. Meanwhile, they are all campaigning on his behalf as opposed to Jessica Cisneros. This is in Texas 28. Look at what just put up, scroll up so that people can only see the actual. Yeah, there. Yeah. Take a look at this report from the South Texas Reporter. It was Laredo, Texas, Volume 1, May 2022. Volume 1. So is this like the beginning? Is this the first?
First issuing of this.
First issue
article
of the South Texas Reporter. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the South Texas Reporter's storied journalistic past. It is a complete fabrication. It is not a it is not a newspaper, or it is a flyer, in fact. And the flyer, put that back up for 1 second. Put up full screen. And it says Cuellar cleared. Congressman, quote, not a target of federal probe. Now, who are they quoting in that instance? Well, it's Cuellar's lawyer.
Coincidentally, the same line that Nancy Pelosi was saying when she was defending her backing of Henry Cuellar over Jessica Cisneros.
And full story is on page 6. You got to go through to page 6. Now, of course, page 6. Now, this is, we should say, this is just a mailer put out by Cuellar.
Yeah.
The lawyer is just his lawyer. There is no other, there is absolutely no other substantiation as to whether he is a subject. It doesn't say subject, right? It says target, which is also a term of art.
And let's just be clear too, without like fully grasping when or where this FBI probe into him will end, or if it has ended, if he wins, this could totally break ahead of the general election.
Yep. I mean, this is a huge liability. Now it says on page 5, I guess, it says DOJ clears Cuellar in widespread investigation. And I guess Cuellar is holding up his hand by saying, no, stop. That's not true.
Yeah, this has been too widespread, this investigation.
Yeah, exactly. But Well, let's turn back on page two. This paper is covering a different story. They don't number the pages.
It's, yeah.
But this is that's continued for page one. But page two, because you can see, go back into the title page, because you can see this. There it is. Page two gives you the quote, Jessica Cisneros was responsible for the breakup of my marriage. She could never look me in the eye. The scandal that, that rocked South Texas.
South Texas, of course, reporter is really on it.
Today. Yeah, these guys really. This is an interesting paper. Go to that, and it's a story of I don't know. She was involved and fell in love with somebody, and
look at that.
Well, Daniel Marins, who's a great reporter who found this and put it together, notes that it attacks Cisneros over personal life drama that failed to get pickup after the Mail and New York Post wrote on it. So in terms of the information is suspect in and of itself as well.
But it's been out there. But this is what Cuellar does. The scandal, supposedly, she had a fling with their former high school teacher, who is 23 years her senior. Text reveals his ex claims the politician broke up her marriage.
Seems like that's more on the teacher, if it was even true.
Yeah, but I mean, she's pro-choice.
Yeah.
You're not.
Where so is there that it is. In the South this, Texas
this gives you a,
reporter?
This is this gives you a sense of just how desperate Cuellar is, and in many respects despicable, and also how much the Democratic leadership, how low they're willing to go. And if we had a decent Democratic leadership, they would come out and say, this is not appropriate. I question my endorsement, whatever it is. They won't do any of that.
There's one thing, the pro forma, we defend all our incumbents thing. But then there's another of like making the trip down there.
Yes. Seen with it. Right. And there's also like, is there really no incumbents that you wouldn't? Really?
No, they want a big tent party, and that means we stand for nothing in terms in the big tent.
We stand for big tents.
Yep. The bigger the tent.
With the circus.
The better the party. Right, yeah. Well, you could argue Democratic
Does
leadership
your party
is in a circus.
Support tents?
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, we're going to get to David Dane in just a moment. A couple words from our sponsors. As you know, I have not only been sponsored by ZipRecruiter, I've been a customer in the past. Certain people just make my life easier, and I don't know what I would do without them. And it's like you own a growing business, you need to hire. ZipRecruiter makes hiring so much easier because they do the work for you. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter uses its powerful technology to find and match the right candidates with your job. You can easily review the recommended candidates and invite your top choices to apply. The process that when I used ZipRecruiter to find Brendan, it was I was nervous. I don't like the hiring process. I usually don't have not organized at all. ZipRecruiter made it incredibly easy. I interviewed maybe a dozen people. Brendan was one of those people that ZipRecruiter goes out and finds and encourages to apply to the job. And with good reason, the guy was already familiar with like all our YouTubes. He had worked on another gig where he was like, yeah, no, I know what you do. I actually had to block your YouTube things because I was looking for those clips. And every time I would find them, you guys would be talking about it. He didn't say it with that sort of like
disdain
that I have.
Right.
I don't know why that's developed over the years and when I retell that story. But 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates within the first day. It's no wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site based on G2 satisfaction ratings as of January 1st, 2022. It was only like 4 months ago. It was 5 months ago. In fact, the hardest thing you have to do is remember our URL, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's where you go to try ZipRecruiter for free. Try it out for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/majority, M-A-J-O-R-I-T-Y. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. And remember, I've always said this before, the best time to look for someone to hire or to get you comfortable with this is when you don't need to hire anybody yet, because you don't want to be doing it in a panic. Go try it out for free. Do it today. Play around with that thing. You'll see. It's a great, great piece of technology. Also, this is I'm also a customer of this. Do you ever wonder what stories you don't know about, you know, from your parents? Because you don't know. I can tell you, as being a parent, my kids have no idea who I am, and they're not going to find out. Because they don't care. They don't care to ask. And I'm not going to sit there and start blurbing about stuff that isn't. But this
They'll
is
care eventually.
They will care eventually, but maybe then you don't want it to be too late. StoryWorth is an online service that helps you and your dad, could be your mom too, but we got Father's Day coming up, connect through sharing stories and memories and preserve them for years to come. This is what happens. Every week, StoryWorth emails your dad with a thought-provoking question of your choice from a vast pool of options. Each prompt asks questions you never thought of, like, what was your fondest childhood memories? Or have you ever feared for your life? Or what was your greatest adventure? I mean, just weird questions that you never think to ask somebody, but it starts forcing them to think about things. And then they end up writing a little story. And after a year, you got like 52 weeks of this, StoryWorth compiles all those questions and stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that the whole family can share for generations. It's just such an obvious and awesome idea. So helpful. So check it out. I mean, this is, it's just an invaluable sort of gift, not just to them, but to you too, frankly. Give to all the fathers in your life a meaningful gift you can both cherish for years to come. StoryWorth. Right now, for a limited time, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/majority. That's Story, STORY, Worth, WORTH.com/majority to save $10 on your first purchase. StoryWorth.com/majority. Folks, Father's Day is a good excuse to start it with your dad, but also, good excuse to just start it with your mom, too. Or your grandparents, your uncle, whoever is important in your life. You should check it out. StoryWorth.com/majority. And lastly, hang out outside. 93% of life, as you know, is spent indoors. COVID was the time we started to get outside a little bit more. When you finally get the moment to soak in the fresh air, you got to make it count. Warm weather is here, folks. It is time to build your own outdoor oasis. Outer is an innovative, high-quality outdoor furniture. It is designed to look and feel great, and it does. Create your own backyard resort with everything from teak chairs to fire pit tables. And the thing is, every Outer piece is made from sustainable materials. It comes with a patent built-in cover for effortless protection. That way you don't let the stuff deteriorate over time. It's built incredibly well. And it's all for less than you would pay at a big box store. Outer Furniture comes with best-in-class warranties, like a 10 years for their chic aluminum line, and a two-week trial with free returns. You bring it home, you don't like it. I mean, they ship it to you, you don't like it, and you send it back. You can see the difference at liveouter.com/majority. Plus, for a limited time, you get $300 off and free shipping. This is Outer's best offer anywhere, only available to podcast listeners, and only for a limited time. Get $300 off and free shipping at liveouter.com/majority. liveouter.com/majority. Terms and conditions, of course, do apply. Now, I'd like to welcome back to the program the executive editor of the American Prospect. My daily read, to be honest, one of my daily reads, but I always read it. I know it's the case with Emma as well. David Dayan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with formula.
All right.
I saw pictures of, like, I don't know, it was like a C-130 delivering these things around the country. What happened with this? Like, how did we end up having a shortage of baby formula? And to the extent that we did we have a shortage, or do we just have, like, the baby formula is not in the right place?
Well, we had both. So to start, baby formula was no different than a lot of other goods during the pandemic, particularly in the range of a mismatch between expectations and reality. So there was kind of an expectation, kind of when the lockdowns began, that there would be this big baby boom because everyone would be stuck at home. But that didn't happen. There was actually a baby bust over 2020 and early 2021. And I think there might have been some expectation that would continue, but it did not. There actually has been an uptick in babies in the end of 2021 and beginning of 2022. And I think that there was a lack of preparedness for that. And so there was a bit of a shortfall. So that's one little thing. Another little thing is the sourcing of ingredients, which, you know, with COVID, there has been problems throughout the country and throughout the world with just getting the ingredients, particularly some of these components come from China. So it's long supply chains, it's harder to get over here, et cetera.
So wait a second. So at least so
these are smaller.
Right. So but these first two ones are sort of almost like generic problems associated with COVID, right? I mean,
that's right.
Like it changes the way in which we consume things. I mean, you know, nobody could predict that, like, for 1 year people would be like, I don't want to have kids. The COVID's here. And then as COVID's ending, people are like, I will have kids. And and so they start to copulate.
And
kids.
To a lesser extent, I'm going back to the office and I can't breastfeed. So or I'm not going to be able to do it in the frequency that I expected or I was able to before. But those are the smaller issues. The bigger issue is that there was a recall at one plant that Abbott Labs runs in Sturgis, Michigan, which produces 20% of all the baby formula in the United States. And baby formula is a product, unlike many other products, where 98% of it is domestically produced, at least at final assembly. Some of the ingredients come from abroad, but domestically, almost all of it is produced. So when you take 1/5 of that out of production, you're going to have problems. And those problems are magnified by the way the market is set up. And we can talk about that.
What is Abbott the biggest single producer of baby formula?
Yes, Abbott produces about 43% of all baby formula that is sold in the United States goes through Abbott, through a variety of different brands. Similac is the biggest, and there are a few others, and they're all at the Abbott family.
Do we have, like, is there any type of, like, analog to this? I mean, I imagine there is, but, like, where you have a product that is needed, like, people need this on a daily basis, right? This is not, like, something like, this month we'll go without it. This is not like, you know, I'm going to hold off on that purchase of the flat screen TV. I'll stay with the TV I have. This is something people need on a daily basis. Do we have anything like analogous to where you have one factory that controls 20% of the supply of something like this?
I mean, sadly, we do. Like, a lot of things are centralized in terms of their production. Think back to the beginning of the pandemic. Certainly hospital gowns and masks and other forms of PPE were very much necessary, not things that you could do without. And yet a substantial amount of it was made in areas of China that were locked down at the beginning of the pandemic. And so we had nurses and orderlies and medical professionals here that were using trash bags instead of gowns. This is the same problem of centralizing production that magnifies disruptions.
And how much of it is that the centralization of it? And I mean, the conservatives are arguing that this, if only Biden would just reopen the Abbott plant, we would have the baby formula. But the reason it's shut down is because of the, how many babies died? Two?
Bacteria.
It's on the road to reopening, by the way. There is a consent agreement. It looks like it'll be reopened within the next 2 weeks, and you'll probably start to get product out of there within 6 weeks or so. But yes, I mean, really what this depicted was a host of problems at this Abbott facility. This particular bacteria found in multiple parts of the factory, a whistleblower who went to the FDA last October and told them about these problems, who tried to remedy this internally for several months, if not years before that. There were serious lapses at this facility, and it shows even more serious lapses at the FDA in terms of inspections and just listening to people with inside knowledge of what was going on there.
I just want to get back to some of the generic question before we get a little further into this. Is there a within, like, let's say, the logistics community, is there a best practices, best practices sort of like theory as to how dispersed production should be for certain products? In other words, is there someone who wrote the book on just like general needs of society would say, like, 20% one factory, you're asking for trouble.
I mean, clearly, no, we wouldn't be in this problem. And not just with baby formula, but the host of goods all over the United States and all over the world. I mean, the semiconductor issue is broadly similar. We have certain plants that make substantial amounts of particular types of semiconductors. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company is the market leader, and those components go into just a host of different goods, from electronics to automobiles, and this is why we've seen shortages in all of those areas. So we have not operated on that fundamental idea of resiliency, where you disperse this, you diversify your supplier base, and you make sure that any one disruption isn't going to affect the entire product line. We have operated on a much different philosophy, one that says, let's look for the lowest cost, let's look for economies of scale, let's look for efficiency throughout the supply chain, let's deregulate what we have to put forward so that we're paying the lowest cost to get those goods shipped and into place. Let's use just-in-time logistics so that we don't waste, quote-unquote, waste money on inventory. As we get the goods off the ships, we get them right into the warehouses. We get them then right into the retail space and out to customers as quickly as possible, and we only order what we need. That has been the guiding philosophy of supply chains and logistics and supply chain management, and it's frankly bit us in the ass in the pandemic years.
So frankly, it seems like it's two problems, though, right? I mean, it's the lack of redundancy, the lack of give, the lack of accounting for disruptions of the supply chain. But then there's the the larger question of the supply chain in and of itself, which is a reliance on all of these dominoes falling in order to maintain our economy in the way that we want it to function, and not being able to account for, you know, something like COVID and more pandemics to come.
Right. And it's not just COVID, and it's not just pandemics. It can be climate change. It can be that knocks out the Yangtze River, for example, last year, or heat waves that shut down air conditioning in various factories, which is what happened in China last year. It could be political unrest like we're seeing in Ukraine, which has caused severe disruptions to the supply chain, particularly for food. Yep. Ukraine is kind of the breadbasket of the world in terms of wheat, and has caused severe shortages in many poor and developing countries all around the world. So there's no one disruption that you sort of have to look out for. There are a number of them. And that is why I have consistently, and we've at the Prospect talked about this consistently, that we need a reset and a rethink of this entire way that we've structured our commerce. But Formula offers an even different and maybe more insidious part of this, because in effect, what has happened through the baby formula industry in the United States has been effectively a government-granted set of small monopolies in every state.
Explain how that functions.
Sure. So there's a program called the Women, Infants, and Children's Program. This is a food and nutrition benefit for the poor. It's supplemental nutritional assistance. And since the 1980s, the late 1980s, it has been structured with regard to formula in this way. The WIC program, and each state has its own state-based WIC program, they contract with one manufacturer to supply infant formula to the program at a discount. That formula then gets passed on for free through vouchers to poor families. In exchange for getting this discount, the WIC program promises these manufacturers market exclusivity. So if you are in the state of Michigan, you can, and you are a poor mother, you can buy one brand of formula through the WIC program and get it for free, but only one brand. No other brand is eligible for WIC. And what this does is it completely distorts the market in every state. So what we know is about half of all formula is bought through the WIC program. So if you're going to a store in the state of Michigan, half of the families can only buy one thing on the shelf in that store when it comes to formula. The rest of the competition, what little there is in this market, is less interested in going on the shelf in a state like Michigan. I'm only using Michigan. I don't know why I'm using Michigan, but they're less likely to go on the shelf because they know that half the people can't buy their product. So why are you going to stock that shelf hoping that the other half of the market uses you to a large degree? And so what we see are these network effects. A great example is in California. So several years ago, they redid their competitive bidding process to get a new WIC supplier. And what happened was that prior to that competitive bidding process, about 80% or 90% of all the WIC sold in California went to the company of all formula in California went to the company that was the WIC supplier, and about 5% went to everybody else. And as soon as that WIC supplier changed, it completely flipped, so that the new WIC supplier now sold 90% of the market, and the old WIC supplier now sold about 5% of the market. So there are these effects that create what amounts to 50 state monopolies. And Abbott has the WIC contract for 34 states and the District of Columbia.
Wow.
And so, and what we've seen is the states that have the most acute shortages are the states where Abbott is the WIC contractor. And that, of course, makes sense because Abbott hasn't been able to stock as many shelves because they knocked out this one major plant of theirs in Sturgis, Michigan.
So what is the solution to that, assuming that you need to make that offer to get to get a discount? Well, A, I should ask, right, is the discount even worth it? In other words, like, how much of a discount is it?
It's a substantial discount for, it's on the order of a couple billion dollars a year for the federal government, and it enables this program to be run at low cost to get free formula, which is it's not just food, it's medicine, really.
Right,
I mean, it's required nutritional assistance for poor children. So, I mean, it's a well-intentioned program. It makes sense to do it. It does not make sense to do it in this way because it creates this monopolization that then is not resilient in these crises.
What's the better way to do it? I mean, it seems to me, just off the top of my head, it just seems like, well, maybe instead of having one given, you said 50 monopolies in 50 states. Well, it's really actually like when you go a little higher on that, it's like, well, one company has 34 of those states and right. You're putting a lot of eggs in that one basket. Maybe what we need is you get two states or something like that, or I don't know, five states for each company or 10 even.
Well, that would tend to make the competitive bidding a lot less competitive, right? Because what they're doing is they're saying, everybody give us your best offer and we'll take the lowest bid. And that's who gets the contract. So, I mean, I think there are a few ways to do this. One is separate that side of the market. If you're essentially saying a government program controls half of the market for formula, then just make it a government program. Just have it be a government supplier that then supplies that half of the market. And the other half of the market is therefore not distorted and can compete for other families who want formula, and hopefully that would drive down the price for that. Because the other thing that happens here is that because WIC is essentially free and heavily discounted by the manufacturer in these states, the other half of the market gets very high-priced formula. And then, in fact, formula is much more expensive in the United States than the rest of the world. So it seems like if we just nationalize the WIC part of the market and then the other part of the market can compete, I think that might be a better outcome for both sides. Another option.
Well, let me just ask you about that in the nationalization. So how does that work? We contract with a bunch of different companies to produce the stuff. And
certainly could be a way of doing it. I don't think we're going to be hiring formula makers directly, but it probably would be a contracting process.
And we'd have the ability to contract a bunch of different factories, so we wouldn't necessarily be reliant on one manufacturer. We'll all put
right.
it into like that, a special formula.
Right.
Like,
that's
Uncle
kind
Sam's
of a blue sky way to fix this market. Another way to ensure that the downsides of the current system aren't so bad is to require in the contracting process some sort of game plan if there is the event of a recall to ensure that adequate supply continues to go out, whether that's through imports or some other function. A third way to do this is instead of creating a system for welfare for the poor where they have to sign up for 80 different programs for 80 different purchases, just give them enough money to actually do the things that they need to do. So maybe there doesn't need to be a WIC program for formula if you gave people enough money to actually do this, and therefore you wouldn't have distorted the market through this complex system of competitive bidding.
Was it the U.S. government that essentially created this Abbott monopoly, or it enhanced it by I guess giving it exclusive rights? But that exclusive rights was also a function of like their low cost too. It sounds like
I would say it enhanced it. So this market has pretty much for decades been pretty concentrated. There were three or four players. Previously, there was a big scandal with Nestle in the 1970s over its attempts to get the rest of the developing world hooked on its formula. They kind of dropped out. There was a fourth supplier that also kind of dropped out. Right now, there still are four in this market, but it's really just two. Abbott, which controls Similac, and Enfamil, which is made by a company called Mead Johnson, but the parent company is called Reckitt Benckiser, and they're based in the UK, and their main product is Lysol. I mean, another problem with this market is that formula is kind of a sidelight to these large conglomerates. So you have Abbott, which makes COVID tests and medical devices and a whole host of things. Their stock price has not fallen in the months since this recall happened because formula really just isn't their main business. You have Reckitt Benckiser, which obviously is a conglomerate that makes, you know, home cleaning products and Durex condoms and like a whole host of other things. And Enfamil is just one thing within that market. Nestle is back, but they only have about 10% of the market because they bought Gerber. Nestle is a huge conglomerate with like 2,000 different products. And then there's one other company called Perrigo that makes a bunch of house brands. So like Walmart brand or you know, CVS brand formula, the generic brands. But there's one company making all those brands for all those different groups. So almost none of these companies have formula at the top of their mind. Like there's nobody in a boardroom saying we have to do better in the formula business or we're going to go out of business. Like it's just not a priority. And I think that's like a large problem in and of itself.
So what's the short-term and long-term solution? We talked about some of the long-term solutions and what you could do relative to in terms of short-term solution. When Biden basically initiates the Defense Production Act, is that really going to do anything? Is he going to do anything with that, or is it more of like we've done it? But
he's already done it. I mean, it prioritizes certain ingredients to make sure that the companies other than Abbott's shuttered lab are operating at maximum output. So that is happening. They've been airlifting this different batches of formula from overseas using government planes to do that. I think they're going to get a handle on this. Obviously, once the Abbott lab in Sturgis, Michigan spins back up, then I think within a matter of weeks, the shelves will be stocked. And I think the danger is that then we forget about this. Like, you know, okay, everything's on the shelf and everything's fine. But this market is still clearly distorted by a well-intentioned government program that is creating like significant monopolization, increasing prices, as well as creating the conditions for crisis that we've seen. I think we need to fix it and go deeper and reform the way this system is having these unintended consequences. And hopefully that will happen.
What's the next product we could see something theoretically? As you look around, where you see something that's particularly tenuous?
There's a shortage right now in medical dye, which is used in a lot of medical scans. I believe at least a quarter of all production of this medical dye comes out of Shanghai. And Shanghai has been locked down for 60 days because of the zero COVID policy. That's a serious issue because the scans are what you use to check on cancer and to check on a whole host of other medical issues that require immediate attention. And so that's one that is very, very serious. And then food, we're seeing potential starvation in large parts of the world right now because of the breakdown in the production and delivery and distribution of food like wheat out of Ukraine.
Let's talk a little bit about I want to turn away from this specific issue and to a piece that you did that came out today that you did in conjunction with The Intercept about essentially the story. Well, you start with the story of a specific trucker, but indicative of a real problem that we have industry wide, but particularly in the context of this guy who delivers gas, essentially. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the whistleblower's name is Cyrus Coron, and he was a truck delivery driver in Phoenix, Arizona. The delivery is carbon dioxide, which is used in carbonating soda, in breweries, in agriculture, particularly in pot growing, apparently, in a bunch of manufacturing realms. So they had dozens of people to supply every day in this particular region. And Airgas is the name of the company he worked for, and they're the largest supplier of packaged gas in the United States. And according to Koran, and he's put up all his documents, this is pretty rare for a whistleblower to be that transparent. Literally everything that he showed me in this case is up on a website, which is called airgasfraud.com. What he says, essentially, the problem is that nothing worked very well on these trucks. Not the physical truck itself, and it put him in very dangerous situations, where brakes would fail and engines would fail and things like that. But also the, gauges that determined how much CO2 was in the tank, how much CO2 was being distributed to each facility, and how much was left in the truck. They literally were flying blind, delivering all this gas, basing it on an estimate of broken meters, broken volume gauges, and things like that. And they were instructed by their managers to make up the numbers of what they were delivering to thousands of customers. And he has shown, Koran has shown me, thousands of delivery tickets that are supposed to have the beginning item on the meter and the end item on the meter. And instead, those pictures are blank, or they're showing pictures of a logbook, or they're showing they're just blank. And the numbers that eventually are used to be the bill for that customer are made up.
So how do they sit there and just, is it they fill it up? They put the gas in until the tanks are full, and then they just estimate like, oh, that took 3 minutes. That must have been X number of gallons. Or
so sometimes they would figure out like that the meter was 30% off, right? So every 1,000 that it shows, they would add another 300. So they would just sort of pretend what the number was. I looked at one ticket that showed the meter beginning and end showed it that it delivered 8,000 pounds of CO2 to this one supplier, this one customer. The truck could literally only hold 7,000. And yet it showed 8,000. So they charged this company for 8,000 pounds when there was no physical way possible for them to have delivered 8,000 pounds. And that's one ticket. And they delivered to, something like 45 tickets a day. For 5 years, this was a recurring problem that this driver told us about.
There's obviously what amounts to sort of specific fraud here, it sounds like. But how widespread is this, and what is it a function of? I mean, in the piece, he said like they wash the trucks because you don't get inspections on clean trucks.
Right.
I mean, right. It feels like this story and the baby formula story is a story of government agencies, and tomorrow we'll talk about government agencies getting rid of having all their authority taken away. But it's the story of government agencies that have been so stripped of resources that the decisions that they have to make are almost necessarily inadequate.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely part of this. Just on the order of truck inspections, we have an agency, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, that does about 3 million inspections a year. And that sounds like, hey, 3 million inspections. It sounds like a good job. There are hundreds of millions of truck trips every year. And so they're really only looking at a small sliver of the market. With respect to the issues at Airgas, this driver, Cyrus Coron, tried to get higher ups interested in this. He talked to no less than 8 different top managers. In terms of your question of how widespread this is at a problem, I can speak only to Airgas on this count, but, he had an hour long conference call with the top compliance guy at Airgas, and he taped it and he let us listen to it. And, first of all, the president and the vice president of this particular division, Airgas Natural Carbonation, according to this compliance officer, were fired because they weren't keeping with the fundamentals of the business in terms of the repair of the trucks. Cyrus saw no difference between the new regime that came in and the old regime that went out. But he also said something really interesting was that, and this is the compliance guy who said, during COVID, customers were getting billed when they weren't open. They were getting billed for CO2, for deliveries of CO2 when they weren't using any CO2 and they weren't open at all, which speaks to like sort of a broader software automation problem or something. But, you know, the question of whether we see this throughout corporate America, where there are serious issues and it falls to the people at the lowest rung of the totem pole to have to do something about it. I mean, what Cyrus Coron is talking about is him specifically doing these estimates. So, you know, if he, in the event that there is some investigation of this, who do you think is going to be the fall guy? Right. It's going to be the truck driver. In fact, one of the emails that's most interesting here is a manager saying, you know, because they're seeing these serious discrepancies on how much CO2 they're supposed to have and how much they actually have. They have these loss reports that show like 200% losses in certain parts. And the managers are like, what is going on? What do we have? This must be driver error is what right. the manager says. And it's like the gauges didn't work. The volume, the meters didn't work. Nothing on the truck works. But it's driver error if there's a problem with it. And that kind of sums it up.
Both incredible stories. What needs to happen? I mean, the trucking industry just seems to me to be in shambles right now. I mean, both in the context that you work for a company, but also in terms of independent trucking. Because independent truckers, yeah. have, particularly over the past 10 years, it feels like, maybe more, have been just getting brutalized. And there's, you know, the any restrictions on the how much time they have to work have been blown through, it seems, over the years. Is this really just a question of we just need more resources for these regulatory bodies?
Well, more resources and more policy. I mean, the misclassification issue that you're talking about would be remedied by good law that says that if you're a trucker working for a company and you exhibit all the earmarks of an employee of that company, then you are, in fact, an employee of that company and you're entitled to benefits and a minimum wage and certain hours and things like that. So that's kind of a different issue than the resource issue of figuring out how to keep these truckers safe. Right. I mean, trucking is an incredibly dangerous business. I believe it exhibited the second largest amount of deaths from any profession behind construction. And there are like 2 million more people in construction than there are in trucking. And it was barely more deaths in the construction world. So it is a very tough job, a very dangerous job. It had a newfound importance in the crisis, of course, because of the need for logistics and the heightened sense that we need to get these goods moving. I don't know what all the answers are, but I think more people detailing what the serious breakdowns are can maybe lead to some reforms.
Yes, and for that, David Dayan, thank you so much for joining us and walking us through these things. Folks, check out the American Prospect, prospect.org. No firewalls, just pop-ups. so that people can read that that stuff. David, really appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
All right, folks. Going to head into the fun half of the program in a moment. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes the show possible. When you become a member, you not only support the free show during some lean times, but you also get the fun half. If you are a member, all you need to do is log in to majority.fm, find the link if you want to watch it on YouTube, or if you're getting it as a podcast, it'll be you have your member link, and it's there automatically every day. If you're getting it as a YouTube, you just click on that link at the top of the member post, and you will be brought to the fun half side of the show. We've got a bunch of people who asked for help with their memberships. Just give us a couple more days. We're getting on that. And a reminder for members, the Boston show is going to go out soon. We're getting that edited. It's a two-camera shoot. It's pretty fancy Whoa. Stuff. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You will see the show with Ted Leo, Combat Zone, the backup band. Al Franken,
so cool.
Natalie Schur, a couple of really great activists from Extinction Rebellion, and of course, the big debate between myself and I don't want to malign anybody, but a right wing. I don't know.
Like I think he
robot well, essentially from
yeah
the Stoughton, Massachusetts.
I mean, don't dehumanize him. He had an accident.
He had, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that happened at the end of the debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about that.
He's doing okay.
Yeah. All right, folks. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Vina Dubal, a law professor focusing on technology and labor, joined us this weekend on patreon.com/leftreckoning to talk about Prop 22 gig work misclassification and why union bus and CEOs like to pretend like they're MLK. Topics like predatory inclusion and corporate racial benevolence. So these sorts of things where corporations try to make it seem like they're really diverse, but that's only their executive suite, and it turns out that they are just doing the same sort of racialized labor gaps that we've dealt with for 100 years now. So patreon.com/leftreckoning to get access to that.
See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who? What is up, everyone?
Nomi Keene.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm gonna go tell it.
Who libertarians?
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I wanna say. 857-210-3551. One half. 3 8s.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400, $1,900.
$5.43 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You can call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the wheat being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.